Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
119-108. Little feistiness from that Philadelphia program, minus Joel Embiid, but more importantly for your Warriors. 50-9 on the season. The eighth time in franchise history they've hit 50 wins. 2 years ago, this was something we would have talked about all day. Now, it's old hat, is it not?
Somewhat. I mean, for me, I'll never say it's old hat, having survived through three or four decades of just dismal, abysmal basketball from the Golden State Warriors, where when you would get 20 wins, you would mark that on the calendar like, all right, they got 20 wins before February 1st. I'm serious.
Look at us.
It would be wins the lottery. The only reason why any of us knew what Secaucus was because they always were in the NBA draft lottery. So as much as it does feel a little bit, I guess, not quite routine, but close, 50-9. Last year they were 55-5. So 59, a little bit of a step back this year, but it'll never be old hat to me. Never.
Lo, how's it feel to see Draymond Green after playing just 23 minutes against the Nets in one of his worst games of the season, where he shot 1-for-10, 5 points, 2 assists, 8 boards, and a steal? Like I said, 23 minutes, Kerr just decided it wasn't his night and sat him down. To see him last night in Philadelphia, that's a big outing. That's a big bounce back. Any reason to still have maybe some concern over that net game, or are we past it?
You got to be past it. I think that when you watch Draymond, it's hard. I mean, you've seen Steph last night not have a great night shooting. We've seen, you know, Clay. We ask, what's going on with Clay? What's wrong with Clay early in the season? Different things about Steph. When is Steph going to step on it early in the season? We never have had that conversation of what's wrong with Draymond. Maybe the things that he do far as technicals and flagrants, you may be wondering what's going on with that. But far as his hustle, his heart, his tenacity, what he brings to the game, never. It's one game. So I think we got to move past it because of the fact you see the way this guy bounced back. His mental attitude and his willingness to sacrifice everything, I think the reason why you start to see a fall off here and there is because once he tries to be calm and tries to not do too much, you'll see his productivity fall off. That's how he's wired. That's what drives him, and that's why he's a great player.
You mentioned Steph Curry, who was 0-for-11 from deep last night. That was the worst three-point shooting performance of his career. Here's Steve Kerr after the game on Steph.
It was great. I thought we played a really good game. We just couldn't make a shot. But for the most part, we played a solid game, a poised game. We had we kept our turnovers down for the most part. We had a couple of stretches there where we made a couple mistakes with the ball, but for the most part, it was a really good effort. Just couldn't make a shot, but we made up for it by getting to the free throw line.
Sounds like he was eating pizza there, too.
Yeah, something was going on.
He was getting in.
Was everyone just eating pizza, doing interviews after the game?
Absolutely.
That's what happens when you hit 50 wins in February.
I tell you what, though, Joe, I really wish, and I think that Draymond and KD, they wish they were home last night, because I'll tell you, this is what they would have been playing all through the stadium. Yeah, just thought I'd drop that in there. I thought that was pretty hot myself personally.
Song was hot about a millennium ago. What song was that? That was 50
on.
Cent. Is that his name?
In,
50 Cent?
In Duck Club.
Curtis Jackson?
But Duck Club, I believe, yes.
I wasn't even allowed to drink when that song was hot.
But
I didn't even know what the club was.
Damn, I already had liver issues. I'm kidding. It's funny.
For entertainment purposes only, I want you to pay attention to something tonight. Steph went 0-for-11 last night, right? He went 0-for-10 from deep on November 4th against the Lakers. That was previously his worst three-point shooting effort of his career. Next time out against the New Orleans Pelicans, he sent an NBA record with 13 three-pointers. This guy bounces back, and he bounces back in a big way. Now, I don't think there are any props out there for how many three-pointers he'll make. In playoff games, you'll get that. But in a regular season game against the Wizards on a Tuesday night, you won't. But you will get an over-under on points, and you'll probably get one of those over-under points, rebounds, assists all added together. I'd keep a very close eye on that tonight for the over, because he's going to come back in a big way. I'd also consider the over in tonight's game, 229 points. Wizards not exactly known for their defense dips.
I would like to see what the line is if they have one on backcourt v. backcourt. We talked to Phil Chenier, the Washington Wizards analyst, and he was talking about John Wall and Bradley Beal thinking that they're maybe the best backcourt in all of basketball. And, of course, we think the same thing about our tandem here. It'll be interesting to see which of those tandems goes off for more points tonight. You might see either tandem go for about 70.
Washington, a very intriguing team to keep an eye on, because prior to just recently where they've lost back-to-back, they were surging in the East. They're currently the 4 seed. They've won 7 of their last 10. Now, on the road, they struggled, just 10-15, but at home this season, 24-8. But the Eastern Conference going through a bit of a shakeup at the moment, starting with the news yesterday that Toronto guard Kyle Lowry expected to miss about 4 to 6 weeks. He needs to undergo wrist surgery. They're expecting him to be back in time for the playoffs. But Toronto's sitting there with the 3 seed, 6 out. Boston's got the 2 seed, 4 out. And it looks like Andrew Bogut's going to be going to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have the 1 seed. What do you think this means for the East, Lowe, the Lowry surgery, more importantly than anything else?
Yeah, it's tough because they made the right moves. You look at Ibaka and all the things that was going on for this franchise, and Lowry is the guy who's their prolific scorer. He's the guy who can create a shot. He can shoot the 3-ball. He plays defense. He can penetrate. This is a huge loss for this organization. And you're talking about, you know, especially when you're talking about a wrist, it's, you know, it's different. It's the motion, the shooting of the ball. So you have some floating, you know, tissues, bones in there that they had to get removed. This is a big loss. So they're going to hang on, but just don't know how prolific this can mean. So this is a big news, especially out of the East.
If we were handicapping it right now, would we say anything but the Celtics as the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference?
No. I think the Celtics is a foregone conclusion. They're only, I know they were 38 wins. I thought they were only 2 behind.
38 and double deuce, 38 and 22, yeah. 4 back of the Cavaliers.
Yeah, so to me, they're the team. They're physical. They got their playmaker. They're a team that can hold, I think, is going to hold court and stay at that position.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Stenson waiting around because he's always a pleasure to talk to. The Hall of Famer Rick Barry with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Rick, thank you so much for your time this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Got up again this morning, so it's another great day.
Love your approach to life. Absolutely love it. We were just kicking this conversation around regarding the Warriors and the Cavs in the last segment, and I wanted to get your perspective because you've played on championship teams before. I'm of the belief I would prefer to see Golden State and Cleveland no matter what, just because of the entertainment value. The fact that 3 in a row makes this something that history will always remember. I do feel that if you don't end up beating Cleveland, if it's Toronto or Washington, you find yourself in a situation where, while still great to win a title, a bit unfulfilling. Am I off base there? How would you feel about that if you were a member of the Warriors?
Well, I mean, obviously, you just want to win the championship, and whatever happens, happens. You want to be healthy. You want to get into the finals playing your best basketball, and whoever you have to play against to beat, that's who it's going to be. Obviously, they would probably like to get another shot at Cleveland. It would be nice to be able to redeem themselves after handing it to them on a silver platter last year. And from the standpoint, the league would probably love it. If you're a true fan, I know I would love to see him play them again, but in the reality of it is you just want to win again, you know, and if it happens to be Cleveland, that much better.
Steph Curry 0-for-11 from 3-point land in the win over Philadelphia yesterday. How does an elite shooter like yourself, like Steph Curry, how do you bounce back after a performance like that?
Well, don't put me in the same class as Steph Curry. I was not an elite shooter. I was a scorer. Steph Curry is at a different level, but
yeah,
it's a perfect example. I actually use that for my youngest son, Canyon, who's playing at the University of Florida, and I tell you, son, don't feel so bad. And I'll bring that up to again. I say, you can't worry about it. Steph won 0-for-11. I mean, I've talked about, you know, playing terrible. I said, it happens. I mean, that just happens. And that's why, you know, if you're a great shooter or scorer, you don't get down. You don't get discouraged over that. Now, here's the thing. If I'm Washington, I'm saying, oh, my God, if I'm the coach there, I can't believe that Steph went 0-for-11 last night. My God, what's he going to do to us? Because you know he's not going 0-for-11 again.
I couldn't agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more, Mr. Barry. Talk about the center
Rick,
position.
Rick. I'm sorry. No, stop that, Mr. Barry.
Oh, I just
yellow.
I'm just pan.
Well, I'm glad that your parents brought you up properly to show respect for your elders.
You.
But when the older person tells you, you call them a different name. If I told you to call me, hey, stupid, you know, then that's what you should call me.
Fair enough. Rick, you're the man. I'll tell you right now, I love you even more, especially when you check Dibley like the way you did. But anywho, as I digress, when you're talking about their bigs here with the Dubs, you see McGee, see how he's transitioning into this offense. You see what's going on with Zaza. In David West, how do you think that they're performing, and do you see where do you think that they can improve?
Well, I McGee was a guy that I saw just being saw the Nuggets play someone being up in the Denver area in Colorado Springs, and I always felt that he was a really talented guy. And if he got with the right team, and sometimes it takes guys a little longer to mature and get the idea of what it is. But playing with a team like the Warriors and the way they play so unselfishly, and the easy passes that you get, and the fun you have playing. I'm happy to see him, doing what he's doing, and the other guys come around. Pachula as well had a really great game, obviously, last night. So that's important. But the most important thing is we talk about their offense coming around. It's their defense. The Warriors' bench has got to become a force for them. The last two seasons, I really do believe one of the reasons they were able to win 50 games and win a title and almost win another title last year is because at times when the starters are struggling, the bench sometimes would come in and actually get them a lead, or if they had a lead, maintain the lead. And you have to have that. You have to have the other players on your team who get a chance to play in limited time to perform at a high level. Even back to the Stone Ages when I played, our guys on the bench got the job done. We went deep. That's why the similarity between the two teams, the championship teams, 40 years apart. When I wrote a story for the Examiner, when I was writing, I was like blown away because I knew it would seem similar. But when I got into it, the similarities were just almost astonishing. And it's the bench that's such an important element, especially with them being able to come out and play tough defense. That's the part I'd like to see them focusing on from now to the end of the season to get them to be consistent and do that kind of work for the Warriors.
The great Rick Barry with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Be sure to check out the website, rickberry24.com. I'm glad you mentioned defense because some believe that after what happened during the trade deadline period, the Houston Rockets could be the team most in line to challenge the Warriors for the Western Conference Championship. Would the difference between the two come down to Golden State's edge on the defensive end of the court? Because this would definitely be a high-scoring matchup.
Yeah, well, it comes down to defense. I mean, you don't win championships without being a good defensive team. I'm not saying you have to be the best, but I've really looked at it very carefully. And I'm sure if you went back and did research, you'll see that no team that's won the championship has been a bad defensive team. You're not going to win a championship if your team doesn't play good defense. The better you are, of course, the more your chances are enhanced. But you have to be able to play defense. And I would agree with you that if it came down to a shootout, total shootout, yeah, Houston could be an issue for them. There's no question about that. But it's not all about your offense. It's about the defense. And the defense is the one element in the game of basketball that can be consistent because that's just smart play, helping your – and I'm talking about team defense. I'm not talking about individual defense. That's a bonus if you get a guy who's a tough individual defender and make a guy work hard. He's not going to shut him down because I always laugh when I hear that term. Oh, he's a lockdown defender. Trust me, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a lockdown defender. Whoever says that has no brains when it comes to basketball because no defensive player is going to lock down a great offensive player. You just make him work harder. But if you have a couple of guys that can do that, it make them work harder, and they're good defenders team-wise, that's where the key element comes to. So it's going to be interesting to see what evolves here. The thing you have to be concerned about playing Cleveland has done one heck of a job of going out and adding some veteran players to their roster. I mean, Kyle Korver, amazing three-point shooter, fitting in with them now. And now they got Deron Williams. I mean, this could be a very, very dangerous team and perhaps, even a better team than they were last year when the Warriors found a way to lose in seven games.
Rick Barry joining us on 95.7 The Game. Your number one ambassador, for lack of a better term, of the underhand free throw, your son, Canyon Barry, shooting 90% at Florida. Do you have plans to go out and see him in his deep run through March Madness? And might this exposure help the underhand free throw?
Well,
No, go out and see him. Are you kidding me? For the last 4 years, I've been there every time. I stayed three years in the Charleston, South Carolina area. I wish I had the luxury to have done that with all my boys, but I didn't. And I have the good fortune of doing that. It's been a joy for me. He's a wonderful young man and a brilliant young man. And I've been in Charleston for 3 years watching him play there. And I'm in Gainesville for the winter to watch him play here. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night, his senior night, get a chance to walk out in the court with him and his mom. And hopefully he'll have an opportunity to play well like he did before he hurt his ankle. He came off a 30-point game and then twisted his ankle, and he was playing with a sprained ankle. So he's got two ankles that are, you know, not 100%. So he's struggling a little bit right now with that. But hopefully he said he felt better yesterday. But my son has a great chance. I've been trying to tell the Warriors. I think my son would be an unbelievable Golden State Warrior player. He would thrive playing in the system that they play. Steve Kerr would love him. And I see him as someone who could develop, because people have only seen the tip of the iceberg with my son. He can do so many things that he's not been given the afforded the luxury of doing where he's playing now. But somebody came out with a statistic. He's played three games where he's played 30-plus minutes. In those three games when he's played 30-plus minutes without, you know, being the focal point of the offense, he's averaging over 25 points a game.
Jeez. And an underrated part of Gainesville.
Yeah, no, my son can play, and there's no question about that. And maybe somebody this time will actually listen to me, because nobody ever listened to me with my boys going to college when I kept trying to tell these coaches that, look, you take my son, you redshirt him, he's going to be a good player, you'll get 2, 3, 4 good years out of him. Nobody wanted to listen to me. Bobby Kremins believed in it finally after he had John and Drew, and he was going to coach him here at Charleston, but then he had to retire. But he's the only coach that ever really listened, but that wasn't really until after he actually saw two of them and what they did. Now, I'm trying to tell these guys on the pro level that I'm not talking as a father. I'm talking to somebody who knows basketball and knows talent. My son can play in the NBA if given the chance.
Rick, how about this? Rather than talk about the Warriors next time we have you on, how about right around the time of the SEC Conference tourney or going into March Madness, we bring you on to break down the Gators?
Yeah, I mean, well, I have to be really careful there, because I wouldn't want the coach to get upset with me, you know, so I try to not get meddled. I don't meddle when it comes to talking about the team. I just try to shut up and zip my lip up and just pray that my son goes out and plays well, which he's done, and to help this team, which he's done.
Yeah, Joe.
And we'll see what happens. But all I'm telling you that you'll listen to me, folks, Warriors, I tried to talk to Bob Myers. Bob, find a way to get my son. You're going to have 17-man rosters, I think, this next year with the collective bargaining agreement, so you got room for a couple extra guys. Why not take a guy who's brilliant, understands the game? He's got some pretty good pedigree.
That's love, sure. A humble brag, Rick. That was awesome.
Rick, let me tell you something about that Florida interview. No one asks bigger softballs than I do. No one throws more softballs. I could set you up perfectly for that interview.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, the sad thing is they. I think they really would have had a chance to really go deep in the play in the NCAA tournament if they hadn't lost their center John Egbuno. Their backup guy Kavarius is doing a great job playing. He's athletic as heck, but John is, you know, 255 strong, block shots. It would have made such a difference against teams with big, powerful guys. So they're going to have to really do something special to see where they can go. But they're a very dangerous team. They play tough defense. And when they're going good and they're shooting the ball well, they can beat anybody. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. They should have beaten Gonzaga early in the year. I mean, Gonzaga shot 70% from twos and 67% from threes in the second half and barely beat them.
The great Rick Barry with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Be sure to check out the website, rickbarry24.com. Rick, it is always a pleasure getting to catch up,
guys,
with you.
Check out the commercials that will be coming up in the NCAA tournament, especially the ACC tournament. I just did something for New York Life, and I'm doing some fun. I did some fun stuff, and it's involving shooting the underhand free throw, so it'll be fun.
I can't wait, Rick.
Thanks for the heads up.
All right, guys.
Take care, Rick. Thank you again.
All the best. All right.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Starting tomorrow, the NFL Combine will get underway in Indianapolis. Now, tomorrow, you're not going to get any great news stories regarding players because it's just medicals. So that's all that's being done, the poking and the prodding. Lowe can tell you all about that, and he's going to in just a couple minutes. But after that, we'll get some running backs and receivers running towards the end of the week, and then we'll get into the bench press and all this other stuff. You're going to have a lot of media interviews as well, coaches, general managers from the teams speaking for 10 to 15 minutes as they do up on the podiums. Fun event to cover. I had the pleasure of covering it, I think, 5, 6 years in a row. Good time in Indianapolis. Great city. They do a great job hosting events like this. You have fun at night because you're out with all the media guys. Everyone's yucking it up. And then by day, there's a lot going on. The combine is all about what happens behind closed doors. This event doesn't need to take place anymore. Outside of the medicals, you don't need anything that's taking place on the field. Because the reality is there's only two things that matter for football players that you're going to draft. One, his game tape. Two, his football IQ. What he does in a 40-yard dash, somewhat irrelevant. What he does in a vertical jump, pretty irrelevant. Now, some will make the case that, no, you got to dig into these guys. That vertical jump could come in handy on blocking extra points. Please. That game tape and his football IQ means more than anything else. This week is about avoiding the rope-a-dope, about avoiding falling in love with a guy who looks good in a T-shirt and shorts, because it's happened time and time again. Stephen Hill, do you remember the wide receiver? I believe he was out of South Carolina. The Jets fell in love with this guy, traded up in the draft to get him because he ran a fast 40 in Indy. No other reason. He's already out of the league. Never did anything. Remember Matt Jones out of Arkansas?
Yeah.
Drug problems.
Ooh.
Remember Darius Hayward Bay? I don't
DHB?
Have to go any further on that.
A 40-yard
dash time. The dude ranks second all-time in drop rate for a player that's played or had at least 150 passes thrown his way. Second all-time in drop rate. Vernon Golston, the pass rusher out of Ohio State. Everyone loved this dude. Ripped, shredded, could run, could jump. One problem, though, for the Jets. Couldn't play football. Didn't record a single freaking sack. Remember Tony Mandrich? On the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Oh, boy.
Perhaps the greatest offensive lineman of all time.
Yeah.
Roided out of his mind when he showed up in Indy. So big, so athletic, the Packers just couldn't get away from this guy. And, of course, all Eagles fans know the name Mike Mamula very, very well. Mamula, who showed up and looked great running and jumping. The point is, the running and jumping means very, very little. You could get rid of this event. The combine's only good for two things. As it pertains to the players, the medicals. This is an opportunity for everyone to poke and prod, and sometimes it saves a life. Sometimes you find an irregular heartbeat, something wrong with the brain, something that wouldn't have been unearthed anywhere else except here, and it can save a guy's life. Or at the very least, could bring up a problem that he needs to go get fixed. The medicals are important because you're investing in these guys. Other than that, it's a great opportunity for GMs and coaches to mingle and talk about trades, free agency, draft picks, all that stuff. The running on the field, though, to me, that means very, very little in the grand scheme of things.
It means a lot to fans, and I think it means a lot, especially to fans who don't follow it with a fine-tooth comb, because you get to see these guys, you get to see their faces, then you see a little game tape, and you start to get to know these players before the draft. And I think teams also, Joe, really rely on the interview. Even if it's just meeting a guy and shaking his hand, the first impression that an athlete makes, whether or not they have a firm handshake, was there eye contact, were they on their phone while you had their two-minute conversation, there's a lot you can learn just by meeting somebody face-to-face that I'm sure that teams relish from the combine as well.
Great point. But could you not do that at his pro day?
You could, but I think when you're in this setting, this large setting, you get a chance to see how he interacts with his peers and other guys in his position group and guys who are out there trying to coach him or at least show him the drill. You know, when you come out to do the cone drill or when you're running the routes, they're at least showing you how to do it. Is this guy listening to the coach? Is he, you know, talking when the coach is talking? Little things like that you can pick up just by being there.
You've gone through it. What was it like?
It's crazy because I agree with you as far as the physical, because it's you hold your hands out. They'll measure your fingers. They'll push, making sure where you're at. They'll move your knees. I'm talking about CAT scan, EKG. This physical is very, very, very extensive. I mean, you're there. You're in your shorts. That's it. You have a pair of shorts on. You're like cattle.
Joe Thomas just said that. He called it a cattle auction.
Oh, it really is. You're lined up, and there's numbers. You open your mouth. They need to see your teeth. You're standing against the wall. They're making sure, you know, tell you put your heels together because we'll make sure you're not trying to get on your toes. They want exact measurements. They're moving your neck. All right, put your head down. Touch your chin. They want to see the radius, how far you can move your neck each way. It's a very, very intensive medical that you're doing. You get stripped down, Dibs. I'm talking, they put all the electric little probes all over you, all over your body, seeing.
And this is you doing it in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
How many years ago?
Yeah, they want to see if you're firing, what's firing on your body, all the different things that they go about doing. So I think, though, that's great, and the interview process is big. I think, too, though, I can get a guy. You're talking about the speed. I understand what you're saying there, Joe. So you can get a guy that runs straight, fast, straight ahead. But I think that also it's a validation. I think they want the world to see, here's a guy that ran this. So when GM said, well, hey, you guys saw him run. You saw him do the shuttle, the cone drill. He showed you that he was agile enough. Everyone gets to see this guy. Here's what these guys have. Here's what this scout. All right, I'm here. So it's scouting also at the finest, Joe, because now other scouts, they interact. Let me see your notes. Let me see your notes. Am I missing? It's like sort of when you go in over your friends, you got to have a study group. These scouts are now, this is them on the highest level at a study group in an environment, though, that they can share and say, what do you have here? What do you have here? What did I miss? Well, certain guys, well, I pulled on this offensive tackle's neck, and boom, he doesn't have a strong back, and his head drops. He's bad. So, boom, you start looking at the little integral parts, different nuances, because you bring coaches and show these scouts, here's what I'm doing. Here's some of the drills. So I think it does help, and it's a validation for scouting, especially at the highest level.
Update, we are stacked in the 8 hour. Sean Livingston is going to join us at 8. The Hall of Famer Rick Barry is going to join us at 8:30. You've got to be very careful with how you process your information as a fan this week as it pertains to the media. More and more media is credentialed for this event every year. Like I said, I used to cover it, and you would be in this room, this giant area of Lucas Oil Field. Hundreds upon hundreds of media members in there all day. And what are they all looking for? Something original, something they can publish that no one else has. More importantly, for the mock draft artists, it's about having that name no one else has used yet up at the top or up in the top five. You want to be the first guy to say DeShone Kizer is going to the 49ers. You want to be the first guy to say Myles Garrett is going number one to Cleveland. Because of that pressure and because of that race to get the page views and to be unique and to be original and to have the first hot take out there, these media members will dissect everything, sometimes a bit too much. You're going to have a 40-yard dash where someone runs 4.4 that wasn't expected to run 4.4. And then he's going to vault up mock drafts and everyone's going to start talking about him. That's why the fans aren't in charge of drafting the teams. That's why it's important for the GMs and the coaches. Stay away from the mocks. Stay away from the media reports because everyone's looking for the new, hot, fresh thing. And that can serve as propaganda to get you off what you should be doing, and that's focusing on talent, tape, and evaluations. Dibs, you're right. The handshake, it means a lot.
And if you've done your work as a scouting department and as a front office, that's all you're going to the combine for, is to check the medical on the 30 or 40 guys you have your eye on your draft board and meet these guys if you can. And, yeah, see them work out. And like you say, talk to the other GMs in the league and maybe make some trades or set the table for future trades like that as well. But if you haven't done your homework as an organization and you go there and you're relying on what you see, you can get duped, you can get fooled. And, you know, the Raiders with Darius Heyward-Bey is a great example, a guy who didn't have a ton of great tape. He had some good college stats and an unbelievable 40, and then they reached and took him in the top 10.
Fun story. This is like 6-7 years ago. I'm at the combine. I'm sitting in the room in Indianapolis, and they're airing this on TV. The problem is what they're airing for us isn't being shown on the network for like 10 or 15 minutes. There was some sort of delay. I had a bookie at the time, and he had a website that offered props. And this was the year A.J. Green and Julio Jones came out, and there were a bunch of 40-yard dash props. Who would run faster, Jones or Green? Jones or Green? I was watching the board and hitting refresh, and I'm watching Jones and Green run on TV, and he's not pulling the prop off the board. So I'm sitting there watching Julio Jones, who was a bit banged up, running on a bad foot, and I'm watching A.J. Green beat him in the first time through. I'm thinking Jones isn't going to get any faster with an injured foot. Fired on Green again, just kept making these bets thinking it was too good to be true. And like an hour later, the guy yanked it off the board because it went national on air.
Right.
And it was like, oh, look at that. Fortin Bowl was all over A.J. Green over Julio Jones. It was like back to the future, like having Gray Sports
awesome.
Almanac in front
awesome.
Of me. Very rare moment.
That's
that
incredible.
Happened. I'm sure it was what, February? So I'm sure I took that and dumped it right back on the NBA later that week.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Second and 10. Raiders have DeAndre Washington, the car's right, a 2x2. Kirkland is out of the tight end. Here's a blitz in the middle. Kyle going to throw a lob wide open. Amari Cooper got it. 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Raiders!
Ah, the old 2x2. You better watch out. That 2x2 will get you. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. The smooth sounds of Greg Papa to get you started this morning. You may be asking, why are we listening to Papa? Why are we listening to Raider Highlights? Why are we listening to Raider Highlights as they pertain to Amari Cooper? All excellent questions because of what happened yesterday in Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown is now the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League. He received a 4-year extension that will give him $68 million in new money, a $19 million signing bonus that is prorated over 5 years because he has 1 year left on his current deal, and this is a 4-year extension being tacked on top. $4.71 million is what he'll make this season, $49 million over the final 4 years for a grand total of $72.71 million over the next 5 seasons. He is currently 28 years old. By the end of the deal, he will be 33 years old. Lowe, is this the best receiver in the game commensurate with the highest paid contract in the game? Essentially, is Antonio Brown worth it?
I think he is, especially because you have a guy in Ben who makes everyone around you better. A guy that can still throw the ball, do a bunch of different things. Antonio Brown, is he the most polished receiver in the league? Probably not. But is he one of the most explosive, dynamic receivers in this league? Absolutely. You look at the kid over in Cincinnati, A.J. Green. He's another guy that can do a lot of great things when the ball's in his hand longer. Can do, you know, I think he has just as good as hands, if probably not better.
He's probably the best jump ball receiver in the NFL. I don't think there's a better jump ball receiver than A.J. Green.
I agree with you. So I think that the San Francisco, I think that when you really look at what they did, the Pittsburgh Steelers of signing him, it's a guy you just can't get around. You can't let get out of the room. A guy you can't let leave your organization, especially when you got Ben in the twilight of his career.
Dibs. This is the same individual who, mere weeks ago, we were discussing the Facebook video, which became a distraction, the contract talks, which were a distraction, the way he handled all that. Now, granted, this was nitpicking. This isn't an individual off the field with domestic violence charges, DUI charges. He simply was live streaming something in the locker room. Yes, it broke protocol, but it's not as if he's a villainous character in the NFL by some standards. Are you surprised that this quickly thereafter the Steelers gave him this much money?
Not surprised, because you mentioned his singular talent, and Lowe is right. If he's even, he's leaving. It's one of my favorite Lowe-isms. And if he gets the ball in the middle of the field against a single high safety, it's bye-bye time, because he will burn you to the corner. And there's not that many guys who have the combination of the hands and the speed, the ability to break away. I wouldn't say he's the best receiver in the league, but he's in that group. If you're sitting down to have dinner for six with the top six receivers in the NFL, he's certainly there among that group.
Let's do it like this. You're drafting a team, and you're at the point where you get to draft any receiver you want for that team. Who do you take? Now, that being said, if a guy's a little bit older, let's take him in his prime. So you don't have to worry about saying, well, I take Beckham because he's 6 years younger than so-and-so. Who would you go with right now if you had one season? Who would be the receiver you'd want to build around?
If I had one season, I said, here's a guy that right now that I could think that could give me everything, and they're both the same age. I like AJ. I think that
AJ Green.
Yeah, I think that AJ Green, I've never seen him get ran down from behind. He's a good kid. He's a good young man. I think when you look at the quarterback that he has compared to Ben, I don't think there's even a comparison. I think what AJ Green, his hands, like you talk about jump ball, everything that he brings to the game, I would probably take AJ.
Dibs.
I go Julio Jones, not just because of the recency bias of the Super Bowl. He is.
He's a bad boy.
That goes all the way back to Alabama. No recency bias there. He's outstanding.
And the physicality, the hands, the ability to run all the routes on the tree. I think that he took that big step up in the postseason to where you look at him now as one of the true greats in the league.
Sean Livingston's going to join us today at 8 a.m. It's Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. This is interesting because how will this affect Amari Cooper? The Raiders are very fortunate that they've done such a nice job of drafting as of late. Every time a star player at quarterback, pass rusher, or wide receiver gets paid, it's going to tie right into the Raiders, because the Raiders have stars at quarterback, pass rusher, and wide receiver. Now, granted, DC will be up first. Mack will come shortly thereafter, and then it will be Amari Cooper. Cooper has never put the numbers up like Antonio Brown has. Antonio Brown puts up comic book numbers. You think this contract is impressive. How about his last deal? It was under the old CBA. He was a sixth-round pick. So that was back when you didn't have to wait 3 years to give out new contracts. You could do them after 2 years. And after two seasons, the Steelers gave Brown a five-year, $42.5 million extension. In those 5 years, per season, he averaged 109 receptions for 1,420 yards with 9.6 touchdowns per year.
Wow.
At an average of $8 million per year. That's a steal. That's a steal. So the Steelers are coming out well on both ends of this equation.
Sure.
Cooper, however, when he's up in a couple years, this is the type of deal the agents will point to. Is he going to end up being worth Antonio Brown type money?
You know what, Joe? Right now, I'd have to say no. And I'm saying no because this is his second year, and you want to see this guy make that huge leap and have that huge sphere of influence on the game, not just off the field, but on the game. Is he a talent? Yes. Haven't seen him climb the ladder like Antonio Brown to go and go get balls. Haven't seen him necessarily. He think he's one of the, I think he can stop and go better than Antonio Brown, meaning that, you know, get to a point, stop, and then restart again. I think he's one of the better guys in the league. He runs great routes. But I haven't seen him say, this is my game and I'm going to take over. No matter what you do, I'm going to take over. And you wanted to see that this year. Is this guy a talent? Is the potential there for this guy to be one of the best in the league? Without a doubt. But right now, he's not a top 10 receiver. In my book, I got 10 other receivers that I take every day over this guy just right now. Potential-wise, the guy has all the measurables.
Receivers are like Skittles. They come in a different variety.
Right.
Different flavors, different styles. They're the big physical types like Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson.
Right.
They're the short, speedy guys like Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. Right? So maybe Cooper doesn't project to be like an Antonio Brown, but who does he remind you of? His style of play, does a more established player come to mind?
I don't know about established, but a guy who's a little off kilter, and if he was more grounded, I think that he could be like him. If he had his mentality, but just not his ethics, it's just not his mannerism. That kid from the Giants, Beckham. When you think about,
really,
because Beckham is strong, he's fast, get in and out of breaks, run great routes. He's strong, can snatch balls. Cooper runs routes just as good. I think he's just as fast. But the difference is one of them says, I'm going to take it from you. It's mine. And that's the difference that we don't see yet in Amari.
You want to see a little bit more ferocity.
You want to see that. Yeah, you want to see that dog because the talent's there. The talent is there. So to me, Beckham has that dog. There's a lot of all the different things that he does off the field and all the other stuff, fighting. You don't want that. But just his talent, if you can keep him under control, I think that those two guys are in the same sphere.
Dibs, as I was writing about this last night, I kept thinking to myself, this is the first that we were going to have talked about the Raiders in a little while here. And the more I thought about that, the more I realized what a good thing, how well they've managed themselves since the Las Vegas debacle.
Yeah.
Remember that? National news for how poorly that all broke down. And then all of a sudden, just, I don't know if it was a code red or what, pure silence across the board. Sometimes that's a good thing, not hearing any news. Sometimes no news is good news.
Yeah, and I think the Alden Smith thing would be the other thing that popped up, and that's not necessarily connected to the Raiders so much because you didn't play for them last year, and they've gotten some distance from him as well. And you're still waiting to hear what's going to happen with the owners' meeting in March, if they're even going to bring up the idea of Vegas. But you're right, Joe, we haven't heard a whisper of it, and this is the offseason. It's supposed to be quiet. Everything should be buttoned up heading to the combine.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Prior to a July 4th fireworks accident, Jason Pierre-Paul was averaging half a sack a game and 3.8 tackles per game. Since the firework accident, he's averaging 0.4 sacks per game and 3.95 tackles per game. Tackles up, sacks almost maintaining. And that includes those first eight games back when he was playing with that club and still hadn't figured out exactly how he was going to go about his business. His numbers are almost right there. And if you watch him on tape, run defense, coverage, pass rush, one of the most efficient outside guys in the game. One could make the case that he's as good, if not better, minus 2.5 fingers.
It is minus 2.5 fingers. When you see it, his thumb is now a nub. I saw it. I wanted to get a close-up look at it.
Why?
And because I wanted to see how he's able to grab and maintain.
You're not just one of those dudes that really is fascinated by that sort of stuff?
I really
am. You can
am.
Admit it.
No.
Curb your enthusiasm, McEnroe, Larry David, the freak book.
but you got to realize, you got three, you're down to three nubs. And it's hard to grab. You got defenders are coming out. So just think about it. You're playing on the opposite side. You got to keep the outside shoulder free. And how are you going to grab them? You got those three fingers, got to be pretty powerful. And so you really only got two that's fully the
same. How does a crab grab his prey? Yeah.
He just pinches, you know.
But those pincers.
But they're pretty powerful. So
it's tough to pinch Adrian Peterson, I'd imagine. So you got to come up with something else.
Well, I don't know if you're going to try to pinch him. I wasn't talking about goosing people, Joe, and pinching him. But it is, though, to see in his numbers. But it's amazing, though, just how an athlete, the mindset of what Jason Pierre has been able to do mentally, to say, everyone's saying, I am going to be able to do this, so I'm going to show them I am. So he's technique sound, and that's why I think he's doing as well as he is.
He's not happy, Dibs. He's not happy, and rightfully so. The franchise tags are being handed out because the NFL Combine in Indianapolis set to get underway technically tomorrow, but it's mostly just the medicals and the GMs and the coaches meeting with the media. We're not going to have any running or anything until Thursday, Friday, later in the week. So we'll cover that more when we get there. But a lot of business goes down in Indianapolis, a lot of business. And some of the franchise tags that were handed out yesterday: Jason Pierre-Paul, New York Giants; Le'Veon Bell, Pittsburgh Steelers, now that Antonio Brown has been locked up to a four-year extension; Kawan Short, the defensive lineman for the Carolina Panthers, rumored that if he hit the market, could be a nice fit for the Raiders; and Melvin Ingram, the pass rusher for the Los Angeles Chargers, who was another target for the Raiders, should they be in the market for him, should his services have become available. Any surprises to you there, Dibs, at all? Does this affect anyone locally in terms of their game plan?
No, I'm not too surprised. I mean, you find the stars on each team who are going to be up, and you figure they're going to get franchised. I still am waiting for the Kirk Cousins thing to kind of play itself out, and it doesn't look like he'll get a franchise tag unless it's a franchise and trade with a renegotiation on the back end. But it's always interesting to me to see what player each team values at the highest level. I think Kawan Short would be the only one that I was mildly surprised at, but when you look at it, it makes sense that Carolina keep him, a team that needs a stout defense to take the pressure off Cam Newton.
I'm glad you mentioned Kirk Cousins, because there is a big problem brewing in Washington. The way the Redskins have handled this situation over the last year plus has put them in a major jam. This goes back to last year. They franchise tag Kirk Cousins. That happens, all right? No big deal there. It's business. But when they made him an offer, they offered him about $12 million per year. Now, to me, to you, to the average guy, that's a lot of money. But that was an insult to Cousins. Why? Brock Osweiler got $18 million a year, and he had done nowhere near to that point what Cousins had done. So he took it as an insult. He went out, he had another good season, and now he's holding all the leverage. Because you can tag him again. You can keep him in Washington again. But come the following year, he's gone. And you're really not doing your franchise any good. Either Cousins plays poorly and you suffer and possibly clean house, or Cousins plays well and he's leaving. And you're going to have to start all over again with quarterback position. John Keim of ESPN wrote about this problem the other day, yesterday, I believe, and talked about how bad a shape the Redskins are in with Cousins. This is the paragraph, though, you should take away from it. Quote, "The Redskins' problem is that there's only one team Cousins will sign with right now, according to one source, San Francisco. So Washington doesn't have much bargaining power with other teams. This isn't just about Cousins maximizing his financial value. It's about putting himself in the best position, reuniting with a coach in Kyle Shanahan who loves you in an offense that you love. That's a win-win for Cousins, but it's a tough way for the Redskins to maximize his trade value on the market. At the same time, you've got general manager John Lynch talking about how the team is willing to trade the number two overall pick. Now, that's no surprise. You've got to throw that out there. You've got to be willing to do anything. So that's just business. But here we go. Cousins is making it very clear there's really only one place he wants to go. That really hurts Washington's negotiating power. Could the Niners be able to step in here and swing a favorable deal to land Kirk Cousins heading into this season?
I think so, because, Joe, right now, I'll tell you right now, John Lynch is not giving up the number two pick for Cousins. Not happening. He's so not good enough.
So that's the deal on the table. Number two for Cousins, you
pass.
Think that's a no?
I punt the ball and kick it down, kick the can down the road and say, have fun. Let me tell you, that guy had DeSean Jackson. You look at Reed, one of the better tight ends.
Jordan Reed.
You brought on a better tight ends in the league. You had other receivers that there, and you still couldn't get in the playoffs. Cousins, you started off really good at the end of the season, and you just flamed out. If I'm the Washington Redskins, I wouldn't have paid the guy. I wouldn't give this guy no $18, $20 million. I don't care if the Houston Texans messed up on Brock because Brock's a bomb.
Jury's still out. Osweiler could be a
the
Pro Bowler this year.
A hung tooth.
Come on,
you
now.
Know it.
Give
and
him some
I
time.
Know it. Everybody know it. What's the matter with Brock? He's a bum. I mean, you know that, Dibs. I mean, the thing about this guy.
Pick the bad moment to take a sip of water.
Yeah,
there.
It's risky with love sometimes.
So, I look at the Washington Redskins, and I think they should hold put. They know something, bro. They're watching tape and saying, okay, do I give this guy $100 million? Is he that tier of a quarterback? No, you can't say, I'm just going to give it because we think that he's an average. He's the middle of the road. Jay Cutler is just, I think he's same sentence as Jay Cutler.
Okay. So, okay, you think he's like a 500 guy like Cutler. He'll make some plays,
yeah.
But he'll make some mistakes, and ultimately he won't get you to the promised land.
Absolutely.
So do you think the Niners would be better off just avoiding this altogether?
No, here's the thing, though. Now, he could be a guy that you say, okay, I would not hitch my wagon for more than 2 to 3 years with him. So you can't go out and give this guy no 6 or 7 year deal, Joe. It just would not behoove him, unless it's going to be cap friendly. But you can't pay this guy over $15 million a year. You can't do it.
Based on what Cousins has said regarding the Redskins in these negotiations over the last 2 years, I don't think that option is going to be on the table. I agree with you. If it's a 2 to 3 year deal, $15 million a year, oh yeah, that's a major upgrade. And you've got the cash. I don't think he's going to be willing to do that.
Then he ain't going
to
find it.
I think he's going to want 5 to 6 years. He wants his monster payday.
I know.
So if you have to do 5 years, $100 million, $20 million per, somewhat reasonable, all things considered, are you going to pass on that
I'm
for the Niners?
If I'm the Niners, I'm passing.
You feeling the same way?
No, I would take that deal.
You like that?
I do like it because you want to make a splash and you've got a head coach that's worked with him, the head coach that's sold on him. And if he is the offensive savant that everybody says he is, and you've got Kirk Cousins, who only wants to come to San Francisco because he only wants to work with Kyle Shanahan. If the feeling is mutual, then let it happen. You can trade back from number two to get Washington's first-round pick, maybe go 15 spots back. I think they're at number 17.
Swapola?
Yeah, a little swapola, switchola, as you like to say. Swap picks, Cousins comes. The Niners obviously give him a couple of other future picks if necessary. Balance the trade and get this rebuild going right away.
There's a third option that's kind of a blend between what the two of you are suggesting. There is no way Cousins is back with the Redskins after this season. Cousins is going to be 29 years old, I believe, in August, which means he'll be 30 years old heading into the 2018 season. You could spend this year, since it's your first year as a head coach and your first year as a general manager, Shanahan and Lynch respectively, spend this year the number two pick and your free agency money addressing the positions other than quarterback. For example, go defense early.
I mean,
go defense middle. Go defense often. Go spend some money on the trenches. Build the team up. Take a quarterback in maybe round 4 or 5 to take a shot at Davis Webb type. And then next year when Cousins hits the market as a 30-year-old, you have that negotiating power to say, well, you've produced, and we'd love to have you, but again, you know you're going to be 30. A 6-year deal is a lot for us, so why don't we consider a 4-year deal? And Cousins realizes that the whole thing didn't play out in his favor, so you might have to front-load this thing a little bit to make him happy, but bottom line, you end up getting a 30-year-old quarterback with less wear than most 30-year-olds because he started late. You get him at a somewhat reasonable price, and you can build around him for a year so that by the time he gets here, he's playing behind a somewhat improved offensive line.
I like that.
Slightly better defense and maybe another wide receiver.
And I want you, Joe, and guess what? Shanahan understands that. Kyle understands, and so does John. If I'm a player, I'm saying all the right things. This is the only place that I consider a trade. This is the only place that I really want to play because I want to be with my coach. You think the coach don't know what he knows? Coach knows what's up. Coach is like, okay, if he wants a player and he believes in this system and he believes that I can help him, then it's going to be favorable for the San Francisco 49ers organization. That's what you do. That's what good management does. You don't go out and spend money on a Volkswagen when you can get a Bentley. You don't overpay for a bug. You overpay for a Bentley or some, you know, a Ferrari or something like that. I ain't overpaying for no Yugo or no just.
Can't call Kirk Cousins a Yugo.
He's not a Yugo. Okay. Let me tell you what he is. He's a Chrysler. He's a Chevy. He's a Ford one. He's good.
Be careful. Bumgarner's a Ford.
I love Fords. First on race day. That's what it stands for. So I grew up on the
Ford. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, hang out with me and I'll give you a lot of stuff, brother.
You didn't come up with that, though.
He didn't come up with it, and the Ford happened to be the family name, but it's an acronym.
First on race day, though. Very nice.
Yeah, and then we got stuff. I would use that, and then my boys from Lemoore say, oh, what, because they're Chevy. I'm from the country.
Don't do the Pontiac one.
No. I promise
I won't.
That
one you're not allowed to do.
I won't.
You can do the Delta with
another
one.
And the other guy, you know, my buddy David Jordan, white guy, and I had a Ford. He has, you know, they have the Chevy, and he goes,
what does it matter that he's a white guy?
You know, because, you know, blacks and whites.
Let him go.
It's just fun. And so
Keep it racial.
Yeah. So I'm like, first on race day. And he goes, no, stands for fixed and repair daily. So we would boom, waves in your face. So we would go back and forth.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
So as I digress, so you got to realize that Cousins is a nice piece. This guy is not an elite quarterback by no stretch of imagination. So when everyone's out here saying Cousins, Niners, I understand you want to upgrade. I understand he's better than what you had. But it does not behoove this organization to give this young man over $100 million, Joe, as the face of your organization. Too many holes that you need to fix. If I'm this team, I look to try to trade this second pick. If not, I'm going to get me the best offensive tackle or best pass rusher available at that number two pick. I do not get this particular quarterback and pay this guy a Brock Osweiler deal because he has not proven that he could be that guy, especially with the weapons the Washington Redskins had this year. He had a plethora of weapons and wasn't able to get them to the playoffs.